Right now, though, I want you to have a listen to this.
Debate.
Europe is in a fight. A fight for a continent that is whole and at peace, for a free and independent Europe, a fight for our values and our democracies, a fight for our liberty and our ability to determine our destiny for ourselves. Make no mistake, this is a fight for our future. Battle lines for a new world order based on power are being drawn right now. So yes, Europe must fight for its place in the world, in which many major powers are either ambivalent or openly hostile to Europe.
There you go. That's the EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen speaking yesterday in her State of the European Union address, talking about Europe being engaged in a fight for its future. And well, it certainly is a very worrying time for Europe, with Russia flying drones into Polish airspace and concerns and warnings from Polish politicians that we've never been closer to war than we are now since 1945, World War II, effectively. With me in the line to talk about this is Professor of Politics at the School of Law and Government, DCU, Donico Beacon. Donico, good morning to you and thanks for joining me this morning.
Good morning, Jerry.
Is she right? Are we in a fight for freedom?
We are. It's not a fight of our choosing, but I'm old enough to remember when there was an iron curtain in Europe separating what you might call free Europe and Europe that was controlled from Moscow. And behind that iron curtain that I grew up with, there were countries like Poland, Slovakia, then Czechoslovakia, of course, Hungary, Yugoslavia. Virtually all of those countries are now members of the European Union and members of NATO. They've tried to escape from Russia's shadow. But Russia, as we've seen, is resurgent. It has ideas about expansion, about reliving the glory years. And as you say, I mean, we've seen how in the last day or two, there's been now attacks on Poland. And as you quote, the Polish prime minister has said that Poland is closer now to war than at any time it has been since 1945.
And a lot of Polish politicians have been looking to America, especially following the recent state visit when Donald Trump promised to stand by Warsaw and not pull out European or US soldiers from Polish territory. But you have the comments of Ursula von der Leyen, which I thought were interesting yesterday, talking about powers either intent on pushing boundaries or going for power for power's sake, and those who are ambivalent. Was she talking about the United States when it comes to that? And we saw, quite frankly, the lackluster response from President Donald Trump to the invasion of Polish airspace.
Yeah, that came a week after his meeting with the Polish president, where he was all bonhomie, of course. No, the world we live in today, and this is, I guess, the substance of Ursula von der Leyen's speech, is a very dangerous and fluid one. And like the kind of solidity of that iron curtain, it's very fluid and unpredictable. And we have to the West and to the East men who believe that the powerful have the right to dominate. This is not unique in world history. The epoch that we live in today, one of liberal democracies of which Ireland is a part, is a relatively short one. And I think it's important to stress that liberal democracies like Ireland make up about 12% of the world's population. We are not the majority of the world. We think sometimes when we go about our day-to-day business that we are, because we are a democracy now of a century standing. We are surrounded by democracies in the European Union. But once you go outside that area, you start encountering a lot of different types of regimes. And now in America, which of course always tried to portray itself as the, a mother of democracies in many respects, or a freedom fighter, we have a president who is openly talking about getting Panama back, about annexing Greenland from Denmark, about Canada becoming the 51st state. That's to the West of us, and of course has bullied the EU into a disadvantageous trade agreement. And to the East of us, we have Russia.
Are you concerned about the fact that we might be sleepwalking into this situation, or we have been, because of maybe an over-reliance on a now ambivalent partner that is the United States for maintaining the world order?
Well, I mean, it has been exposed that this reliance was never, something that was going to guarantee European security. It was never wise or prudent that, you know, European security was going to depend on a power that was thousands of kilometers away. And now that we have in Europe a full-scale war with Russia invading Ukraine, and the Polish political elite have made it clear, by the way, in the last 24 hours, that Ukraine is fighting on Poland's behalf as well. Because if of course, Ukraine had been, defeated, Poland, from their perspective, was next in line. Now, what we've seen is that since the end of the Cold War, there's been a downgrading of defense and security spending in Europe. And Russia, because it has a huge military-industrial complex, is able to dominate. And Ukraine, I mean, what Poland went through in the last 24, 48 hours is a fraction of what Ukraine goes through every night. 19 drones went into Poland, deliberately, by the way. I mean, these weren't kind of navigational errors.
This wasn't an accident, yeah.
But Ukraine has at least 500 drones and missiles fired at it every single night, sometimes as much as 800. And it what's clear by the use of F-16 and F-35 fighters, which are very expensive, to take down a few drones, it meant that, you know, Poland doesn't really have a sophisticated air defense system that Ukraine has developed, had to develop over the last 3.5 years. And that, you know, the EU countries, the NATO countries that are on Ukraine's borders are not ready. I mean, they're also very small. We have to think of the Baltic states in particular, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. Their combined population is about the same of Ireland. They're about 6 million people. They were, until relatively recent times, part of the Kremlin sphere of influence. And they're afraid that they'll fall under the Kremlin sphere of influence again, because of this weakness in the European Union, weakness in NATO, and of course, the ambivalence, as you say, of Donald Trump.
Yeah, do we need any further reminding, or do you think Europe is going to take action now, particularly with what happened a couple of weeks ago at the regional Chinese summit and the military parade? We had Xi Jinping, Narendra Modi, the Indian Prime Minister, and we had also Vladimir Putin, of course, who were sitting there reaffirming their cooperation in terms of what they wanted to do. I mean, are these the people calling the shots now with America on the sidelines?
Well, this goes back to the fundamental choice in global politics that I was talking of, and the one that, again, I kind of grew up with the Cold War. I mean, when you saw the end of the Iron Curtain and the collapse of the communist regimes in Europe, there was this euphoria. You might remember it yourself, this euphoria that the tide of history was in favor of democracy. And what we've seen over the last 30 years is not the democratization of autocracies, which was expected and hoped for, yeah, but the autocratization of democracies. And we've seen that in America. We've seen it within the European Union with the rise of extremists and populists and far left and far right. And what we saw in China was the alternative. It was Vladimir Putin, it was Xi Jinping, it was Kim Jong-un, you know, acting in unison together. They see themselves as a new world order. They see themselves as bringing down a world order that isn't to their liking. And they've made it clear that they're challenging the very values that we take for granted in the part of the world that we live in.
Yeah, Donegal, one of the elements of that, and it's tempting to laugh at it because of the seemingly ridiculous nature of it, was the discussion that was caught off mic by Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping talking about how they would extend their lives, or the modern technologies in medicine now that could keep them alive forever, perhaps. They sounded like a pair of Bond villains, but it's not fun. It's real life. It's not a movie.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and we're used to, again, living in a world where politics is decided by electoral cycles, whereas, you know, in China, in Russia, in North Korea, politics is decided by life cycles, because dictators rule until they die and people have no role in determining who will govern them. And that's a very
different
type of society.
They weren't worried about the next election or the next midterms like, democratic politicians were or are.
No, they were talking about how it might be possible to live to 150 years because of developments in medical science. And Xi Jinping joked to Putin that, you know, you're only a child. I mean, Putin is 72, the same age as Xi. But, you know, obviously they're thinking that they're not in any rush to vacate the offices which they've embedded themselves in.
Okay, Donegal, where does it go from here, do you think? And within Europe and within Ireland, there is a debate going on while all this is happening in relation to our neutrality, and anyone who maybe talks as you're talking and urges that we need to get prepared is accused of being a warmonger. Where do we stand in that debate with what has been happening in China, in Russia, in India, and all the time in North Korea in terms of preparations being made there?
Well, look, I mean, there's an old saying that you should more or less hope for peace, but prepare for war. We do ourselves no service collectively or individually as a nation for not being prepared for worst case scenarios. That's why we take out insurance policies. We don't take out house insurance or fire insurance in the hope that our house is going to go on fire. We take it, you know, just in case something happens. We prepare ourselves for the worst. And sure, it has to be the same with collective security, because we have powers, as I said, who have built up huge military industrial complexes, which are for offensive purposes. They're not for defensive purposes. Europe is an oasis of, you might say, peace and security in the world, but it hasn't got the resources to protect itself. As we've seen with Ukraine, if it is attacked, and we've seen in the last 24 hours again, the deputy head of the National Security Council and former president of Russia, Dmitry Medvedev, threatened directly Finland, saying that they were lucky to get away in the past, but the next confrontation would lead to the collapse of Finnish statehood forever. So, you know, Finland is a country, the same population as Ireland, is just geographically on the other side of Europe, but we are both in the European Union. And, you know, it is in Article 42 of the European Union's bedrock legislation that we have to come to each other's aid if attacked. Now, it will be up to us to decide how best we can help in such a situation, but we can't ignore when our partners are being attacked.
Yeah, okay. Donnacha, listen, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for that. Just one final question for you, and it's just a lot of people are texting in this morning about the murder of Charlie Kirk, the political activist in the United States. Are you concerned his assassination will be used by President Donald Trump as an excuse to ignore Russia and Israel's conduct recently and focus instead on quieting dissent to him in the United States?
I mean, obviously, the assassination reflects a deep polarization in American society, which is very worrying. And as I said, is all part of this kind of autocratization of society there. But for sure, Donald Trump has an innate ability and skill to deflect and distract and not remain on message. So it's quite likely that he will use this domestically. He's already using, you know, the imposition of, you know, military rule in some parts of the United States by sending in federal troops as a way of distracting from issues that he'd prefer not to talk about. So that would certainly be in line with previous practice. We've got a very unpredictable president in the United States for the next 3.5 years. So, you know, in Ireland, as in the rest of Europe, I think we're just going to be hoping that he does the minimal amount of damage during that time. Though I saw there that the Irish Open is scheduled for County Clare, my native County Clare, next year, and Donald Trump will pay us a visit when that occurs.
Yeah, indeed. Tells its own story, doesn't it? Okay, Donnacha, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for giving us your time this morning.
Thanks, Jerry.
That's Professor Donnacha O'Beacon there, Professor of Politics at the School of Law and Government in DCU, with his assessment of where things stand now following the 19 drones being sent into Polish airspace as part of the attack on Ukraine. If you have a view on that, get in touch with us on the programme.